active duty Air Force lieutenant seeking conscientious objector status, and Levi Pierpont, who is a conscientious objector, a friend of Aaron Bushnell. They met at Air Force basic training in Texas. That does it for our show, Democracy Now!, produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feldstein, Augustine Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warren of Trina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astujo. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
Abortion for 1 in 3 women across the country. They are forced to remain pregnant or travel out of state for the care they need, depending how far they have to travel, whether they drive themselves or take other methods of transportation, how long they may have to stay, and countless other factors like lost wages or childcare, plus the cost of the medical care itself. The financial burden can be overwhelming, if not impossible to afford. To see each of their stories and to learn about the real cost of having to travel for abortion access, visit bandsoff.org.
Cannabis is now legal in New York, but only for adults 21 and over. You should talk with the young people in your life early and often about the effect that cannabis can have on the growing brain. For more information, go to cannabis.ny.gov.
That's right, and you are listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook, broadcasting at 90.1 FM, 107.3 FM, and WUSB.FM to the internet. It's 6 o'clock on a Tuesday. Time for Off the Wall. And good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel over here, Kyle over there.
Hey, E, what is up?
Well, a lot's up, Kyle. An awful lot is up, and a lot of us are down. But we're going to get into all that. We only have an hour, and there's so much to cover. But I just wanted to touch upon something, because we just played a PSA about kids and pot and all that. And there was a story that came out this week out over in William Floyd Middle School. Yeah, it seems like a bunch of kids decided to try out some gummies. Not the smartest thing to do if you're below a certain age, because it has a different effect on kids. It's common sense. It needs to be taught in the schools. How about that? Put that on the curriculum. But yeah, 12 kids at William Floyd Middle School in Mauritius were sickened, and 11 were taken to hospitals after they ingested marijuana edible gummies. That was yesterday, handed out by another student. They're 13, 14 years old. You know, I know the drill. I mean, it's what kids do. They experiment with things, thinking that, because, you can get this in a store, adults can get this in a store. Somehow, it's okay. It's not okay. Just like it's not okay to, chug a beer in homeroom. Has different effects on young minds. We all know this. We all know it doesn't help. It doesn't help when there are companies out there that manufacture things that look like their candy or something appealing to kids. And I've always thought that was incredibly stupid. That's incredibly stupid. This has got nothing to do with legalization or with dispensaries or anything like that, because that is the epitome of responsibility. You know, they are very, very careful as to who is allowed to come into their facility, let alone buy anything from them. And just that education that you get by having conversations with people that are not illegal anymore, you know, that are actually out in the open, you can learn what is, you know, good for you, how to keep this out of the hands of people that should not have it in the first place. You know, it's I know a lot of people are going to jump on this and say, aha, that's the proof. In fact, you know, there was a story before this that really annoyed me. There are these towns that in Suffolk County. Some towns have opted out of having marijuana dispensaries anywhere in their borders. In fact, the entire county of Nassau has opted out. But my God, I don't know what's going on in Nassau lately. But here's the thing: it's no longer good enough for them. Republican state lawmakers in Nassau County, they want to create a buffer zone inside other municipalities that permit cannabis shops to operate, so that these shops aren't adjacent to communities that don't allow them. Okay, so basically, okay, let's say you're in Farmingdale, right, which is Nassau County. Well, East Farmingdale is Suffolk County. They would say, well, East Farmingdale is so close to Farmingdale, we don't want it in East Farmingdale because, you know, then our people can maybe see it. Never mind that you have a border for a reason, because you're over there now, meaning you're not over here. So the rules over here don't apply to over there, and you have to have a line someplace. Well, they say, well, yeah, but next to the line is kind of like on our side of the line. So why don't you just have another line and put that over there? And in a couple of years, they'll say, you know what? That line is too close to the people that are over the line that are close to us. Let's move it a little bit more. It's insane. It's ridiculous. And it's also just plain wrong, because they're relying on so-called facts that are completely inaccurate. Anyway, State Senator Jack Martins, a Republican in Mineola, introduced a bill last week that would create a quarter-mile buffer zone on the Queens side of the borough's border with Nassau. Look, I grew up in Queens. I know a lot of people from Queens. We spend time in Queens. People in Queens are not going to take this lightly, being told what they can and cannot do by Nassau. Uh-uh, that's not going to work. So right away, you know, I have to wonder what you're smoking to actually come up with a suggestion like this. Now, this bill also would create buffer zones along borders inside towns such as Babylon, Brookhaven, Riverhead, and Southampton. Those are the towns that allow cannabis dispensaries, although you'd never guess it in Brookhaven because there's not a single one that's open after years of it being legal. Supposedly that's going to change soon, but my God. So yeah, they want to create this buffer zone Now, can you imagine if you applied that to, you know, other parts of life?
Like homophobia?
Well, yeah, that's just everywhere.
Yeah, like 300,
that knows no borders.
300 miles around any queer person.
Uh-huh. I guess, yeah.
Just stay away.
Okay, you're turning this into something that's really hard to conceive as far as borders, but
okay,
yes.
Oh, you need, okay, not specific parts of life.
Yeah, you know, like something simple. Like, you know, let's say an election, all right? You know, the people who vote next to Nassau County, maybe, you know, their vote shouldn't count as much because they're too, I don't know. The borders exist for a reason, and this is, you know, something that I think is very dangerous if you allow that to happen.
Consider like combustion of other forms, like no gas stations or no driving. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, there's lots of other things. Drinking, that's I think one of the, or cigarettes. No cigarettes around a certain area.
It's basically rules. Okay, so let's do it this way. Let's say you're in a state where the speed limit is 70, and then there's a state next to it where the speed limit is 50. Well, okay, what if the state that's 50 says, you know what, for the first 10 miles of your state, we want it to be 50 as well because it's too close to our state. So do that. Do you think that would fly? I don't think it would. I just don't think it would.
It's dumb even just going through some kind of hypothetical for them. It's legal in the state. And I mean, the barn door's open, the cows, everybody's out of the barn, the genie is out of the bottle, whatever, the toothpaste is all the way on your teeth, and is it really fixing what they think? Like, will it fix whatever symptom they're citing, which is nothing? I mean, what is the ill that is coming, that has beset these areas along the border, as you said? I mean, that's not how borders work, but a quarter of a mile away, what's going on that's so terrible?
They're going to point to the story I just read before this, saying, look, kids are getting sickened because they're ingesting things that they shouldn't ingest. No. Kids have always ingested things they shouldn't ingest.
Yeah. Mr. Yuck stickers.
And you have to educate them as to what is for them and what is not for them. Well, better yet, don't buy things that look like it's for kids in the first place. That's not the dispensary's fault. And
well, I think edibles at all, like, there should be a lot more education about that for adults, too.
Yes, definitely.
Because
definitely.
I know I've imbibed myself. I know people that are heavy smokers, and they try an edible, and it's like, it's a totally different high or reaction. Mm-hmm. And in young people, it's going to probably be even more exaggerated because they have very little experience or have yet to experiment, and they're not really at an age to do that. And the thing about it that I think is most concerning is that you can't turn it off.
Right.
Right? It keeps going for hours. So,
and if you don't know what's going on, it can be scary. I've had that myself where, I would have, say, a brownie in Amsterdam, right?
Sure.
Back in the day. And you have half a brownie and nothing really happens. And I say, okay, I'll have the rest of it. And then it really kicks in. I lost 2 days because I just didn't expect it to be that strong.
Someone
that
smokes is going to be able to stop and maybe recover from whatever symptoms of the high within a half hour, 45 minutes, or, you know, 90 minutes. Mm-hmm. Even 5 to 10 minutes, you're not doing it anymore. You can't stop that with something that is being metabolized in your digestive tract,
right,
and coursing through your circulatory system. And I don't think even adults understand that. And I've had experiences and it's like an acid trip. You cannot stop it. There's nothing you can do. You're on the ride, and until it wears off, until you come down, you will be whatever, exceedingly tired, or, you know, noticing maybe some visual effects or some delayed reaction.
Right.
All of those things. It's incredibly dangerous for adults who might be familiar and they're getting in the car after the dispensary and decide, well, they can just, you know, take a handful of gummy. No.
No, no,
do
no.
not. Edibles are a different beast.
And the place where you learn that is the dispensary itself, because they have educated people there who will explain to you exactly what, you know, is good for what particular ailment or what particular scenario that you happen to be in.
Well, dosage too, because they're labeled 10 milligram, 20, some right. could be up 30 milligrams. They're varying, and one gummy might not be the same as the next.
And when you're doing this on the black market, they don't indicate those things. They don't explain it to you. They don't do things like that. It's a lot safer when it's legal, but people are still going to make bad decisions. And we have to, especially with kids, protect them from doing that and let them know, not try to cover it up and hide it, but say, yeah, this is what happened. This is the result of that. I'm pretty sure those kids aren't going to do that again. And nobody was seriously injured. Just probably, you know, kind of scared by what they went through. But they did it themselves, and they're not going to make that mistake again. I would guess a lot of their classmates will never make that mistake as a result. So, you know, a little education there. But please, it shouldn't happen at all. We have such a good thing here. Every trip I've made to a dispensary has been a positive experience. So many people, whether it's, you know, veterans, people fighting cancer, people fighting depression or stress, or you know, just needing to chill a little bit.
And kids, there are so many.
They have benefited from that so much.
There are so many other things kids can be doing that are a lot of fun and build skills and are social. There's plenty of time when you're an adult.
Like video games.
No.
No, do other things.
Go outside.
Other things, for God's sake.
Build something.
This whole generation. I mean, I don't want to speak down to what kids are doing. But, you know, get outside, be, you know, be a kid, please.
There's plenty of time when you're clocking in somewhere, trying to keep a roof over your head as an adult.
You don't have to do that either.
Yeah, you could just live outside.
Because AI is going to do it in the end anyway. So, yeah, just be creative and explore the world make
and
it better.
Comparison shop for feeding tubes.
Yeah, you know, it's we're all doomed anyway. But at least we can have a nice conversation as the world hurtles towards its untimely end. Okay, where do you want to start? You saw the press conference on Friday, with Zelensky, and I kind of knew something was going to happen, because this is a guy that actually has conviction. This is a guy that speaks his mind. This is a guy who's going through hell. His entire country has been in war for the last 3 years, a war they did not start. And, you know, this is not somebody who's simply going to roll over and do what he's told. So for that, yeah, I was not surprised.
And I wasn't a big fan of him taking this deal. I mean, I felt like that may have been one of the best outcomes of this, is that he didn't sign this thing, because the way that's being spun and discussed is itself sickening. It's economic blackmail. I said that weeks ago. It's for us to act as though this war hasn't been nothing but a extremely affordable way of keeping Article 5 NATO action out of our day to day. It's like, it's peanuts compared to what it would cost if we were defending NATO airspace, you know, creating no fly zones over Warsaw or wherever.
Yeah. I mean,
like, come on, put it together.
This whole thing with Vance, you know, you didn't even say thank you. First of all, he did say thank you, but we should be thanking them. They are putting their lives on the line to keep Putin from continuing his march eastward. I'm sorry, westward, probably eastward too, but not westward. And, you know, that takes guts, that takes courage. And to just simply dismiss him like he's some petulant child, it's so disgusting. It's so shameful. I looked over on PBS.org, because they were looking at some of the claims that Trump and Vance were making in this press conference. And they did some fact-checking. And I know fact-checking, that's the enemy these days, because oftentimes they tell you things you don't want to hear because the facts aren't on your side. But that doesn't mean you change the facts. It means you correct yourself to suit what's real and what's not. But whatever. Okay, so Vance, like I said, Zelensky has not said thank you to the United States for its support of Ukraine. This is inaccurate. Vance and Trump repeatedly chided Zelensky for not expressing more thanks to the U.S., but there have been many instances in which Zelensky has expressed his gratitude to the American people before and after Trump took office. on February 12th, after a phone conversation with Trump about negotiations to end the war, Zelensky posted twice on Twitter expressing his gratitude and appreciation for Trump, saying, "I am grateful to President Trump and I appreciate his genuine interest." In a February 19th press conference, Zelensky said he is thankful for all of Trump's support. During the Oval Office conversation, people will say, Vance was saying, "Have you said thank you during this particular event?" I guess he has to say thank you every single moment. But he opened his remarks by saying, "Thank you so much, Mr. President." Were you not paying attention, JD? he doesn't like being called JD, does he? Yeah, that was disrespectful for Zelensky to call him JD.
It was due disrespect. Yeah.
Yeah, it was overdue disrespect.
He should be infantilized.
That's endearment, is it not? You're talking to people, you're friendly with them, you call them by their first name.
Could have said bro.
Oh, please don't. Throughout the meeting, he reiterated his thanks to the U.S., and after the meeting ended, he posted on Twitter, "Thank you, America. Thank you for your support. Thank you for this visit. Thank you, POTUS," which is President of the United States, "Congress, and the American people. Ukraine needs just and lasting peace, and we are working exactly for that." He posted that after he got kicked out of the White House. This is a guy with character, all right? This is somebody who is not going to resort to petty bickering like the people running our country currently are doing. There are also examples from before Trump took office, but, I think the point is made. He's been saying thank you constantly. And are we thanking him? Another claim. Zelensky went to Pennsylvania and campaigned for the opposition in October. First of all, what a stupid thing to say. Campaign for the opposition. First of all, if you're talking about Biden and Harris, those were the people in charge. That was the government. That was, the opposition, fine. You won the election. But you're saying anybody who stood with the previous holders of the office, they're somehow wrong? That's insane. But that's not even what happened.
Talk about insecure.
On September 22nd, Zelensky met with Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro. Happens to be a Democrat, yes. It was not a campaign event. It was at a Scranton ammunition plant where Zelensky thanked workers producing ammunitions for Ukraine. The event was an official one for Shapiro, who was not on the ballot in the battleground state in November. Yeah. So that's just completely wrong. They claim we gave you $350 billion. This is also incorrect. The amount the U.S. has spent on Ukraine varies depending on what's being counted, but most estimates are in the $175 billion to $185 billion range. Mark Kansian, a senior defense and security advisor at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, revealed this fact to PolitiFact earlier this month. So the White House has not responded to any request to clarify where Trump's $350 billion figure came from. And the other thing to realize is that a lot of the money goes into things like this ammunition plant. It's going into America, American workers' pockets. It's not just blank checks being sent to Ukraine and they can do whatever they want with it. That's not true at all. That's the impression they're giving, but it's not true. And if you just look at the facts, you find this out.
Yeah, it's our own government subsidizing major defense contracts and drawing down old stuff, like us digging up stuff that's sitting around so we can get that new hotness stored in our depots for when things really get interesting. I think, like, it's so hilarious to think about, like, what was Afghanistan and Iraq was like 14 trillion. I don't even know what the number is. It's bonkers. And what did that get us, really? Mm-hmm. Other than a bunch of angry, misguided vets or damaged, people suffering from CTE and stuff, trying to reintegrate into our society. The thing that I got curious about was when Trump was talking about you're messing with World War III and stuff. Clearly he's got the pom-poms for Russia. He's cheerleading for them. I want to know, what's the threat? Like, just say it. Say what it is. Like, is Putin orbiting thermonuclear weapons in space somewhere? Is there some satellite? Like, just tell us what it is. What is the big threat that you're so scared of? Keep the personal stuff out. I don't really care what he has on Trump personally. It's beside the point. But what's the big scary threat? Is it just the regular old mutually assured destruction stuff that we live in with a background of forever? I really don't think this is about peace. I can't understand convincing our nation that normalization of relations with a country so isolated like Russia, mm-hmm. just even for like energy imports or whatever, crude trade. I mean, the sake of OPEC or something. I don't know what it is, but really, tell us, what is a threat? Like, what is Putin threatening to Trump that has him so shook? Because you look scared, buddy.
Yeah, yeah. Does he have something on him, or does Trump just admire Putin so much that he wants to be more like him? Because he certainly is acting that way. Shutting down media access, punishing people who criticize him, and not standing up for democracy.
But he said... You're messing with World War III. So he said that all big and loud and scary. That isn't coming from a strong position mm-hmm. of admiration. That's like bullying somebody because you think or you've been convinced that something dire is at play. I don't know. I mean, I could be completely wrong. That's my point, is we don't really know. We're just accepting that, like, he loves everything that Putin can do, and in many ways wants to emulate it here. If that's it, that's really cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's the way he's making it sound. I want it to be big. It better be like really astounding and scary, because he's trying to like strong arm Zelensky as though things could get worse for him. I don't think Zelensky would notice one day to the next if things were getting really a lot worse, because it's been bad. It's been all the way bad
right.
for 3 years. So what's the big scary here? Like, I'm not sure. And I really am tired of being a part of the populace that's just unaware. Like, why do we have to make decisions with zero information?
Well, I don't think looking to our leadership for information is going to be very beneficial.
Oh, no, they're bankrupt. Yeah, there's nothing there.
They have no clue what's going on.
And why would I trust anything they say now anyway?
You know, I realized, listening to Trump last week, every day I wake up and he's talking to some other foreign leader. And it's funny because he doesn't see that they're just, humoring him. But you can just see it in the body language that they can't believe they have to do this. But at one point when he was talking, to the Prime Minister of United Kingdom, you got the distinct impression that he believes Ireland is part of the UK. You know, he kept saying that, kept making allusions to it and not being corrected. And I think to this day, he does not understand he could not probably find the parts of the United Kingdom on a map if he was given access to one. And He's proud of that. He's proud of that ignorance. You know, a lot of people are proud of not knowing things because they consider it boring or a waste of time. Well, it's not. It's important. It's vital to know these things, especially if you're the so-called leader of the free world, which we no longer hold the reign of, because after Trump's actions, it's pretty clear we have no interest in defending the free world. We have interest in power and money and intimidation and in sucking up to whatever dictator happens to be rearing his head this week.
The other thing I was thinking is money. But even that, it's like, how much money do you really need? Like, you're going to sell out all of us, the entirety of this nation, every hardworking person right. that even felt so bold as to vote you into office, and you need more money. What are you going to buy? Like, if this is some big, like, crypto, crazy transaction that's all on the hush-hush, and Trump's going to get this big windfall, like, what else are you going to buy?
You know what I realized?
After 10, 20 million, like, it's kind of all the same.
You know what I realize? Money is cancer. Money is cancer. You know how I just reached that conclusion? Because, you know, it starts off as you know, just something fairly small, trivial. But if you accumulate more and more of it, it starts to take over who you are. And eventually you wind up drowning in it one way or another. It just becomes more powerful than you could ever become, or it just destroys you as a human being. But once you start down that road, there is no chemo for this. You know, it's just, it's like a disease where there's just more and more money coming at you, and that's all you can think about. I wonder about this all the time. I wonder about how people like Elon Musk, or you know, anybody, Zuckerberg, any of these people who had a good idea, profited handsomely from it, why don't they just turn into good people that care? Yeah, I know there are people who give gestures occasionally. Gates does some nice things. But, you know, they always seem to just want more and more and more. And they don't care about the people below them. We're talking about, in this country now, getting rid of a huge amount of Medicaid, the people who needed the most to pay for tax rebates for rich people. And, you know, there is fraud, there is waste, absolutely, but that's not where the money is being obtained. It's being obtained from the working class, from the poor. These we didn't even say the word tariff yet, but yeah, tariffs against Canada and against Mexico are in effect 25% as of today. You know, we're watching CBC before, and you know, it's crazy to see the mood change north of the border, where they realize that we are not their friends anymore and that they can't trust us. And that's not a relationship that can just be put back. That is going to last. So it's sad. It's sad to realize that is the reality that we're living in now, but it's because these are the people that are in power now. They don't care. They want to tear it all apart. And while, you know, some of you may say, hey, it's cool to tear the whole system down. Sure, if you have an idea for something better, they don't. Their only idea is to line their own pockets. Believe me, they are a worse problem than anything that they're destroying. And they will destroy it. And when they do, we will have very little left to cling to. I'm talking about the court system. I'm talking about law enforcement, things that you kind of need, you know, to have in some semblance of order to have any hope of meeting out justice for people. You know, if that all gets destroyed, if we have nothing left and we have no allies and we don't stand for democracy and freedom anymore, what do you think is going to be left? You know, just a bunch of strong-arm rich people getting their way constantly, getting away with everything. Look, we have a guy in the White House now who, by all measures, should be in prison. He was convicted of crimes. He was being charged with so many more. He did these things. We all saw him do these things. And to say, yeah, but it shouldn't apply to him. Why the hell not? It should be applied more to him than anybody else. He had a responsibility. You know, he was trusted to lead our nation, and he let us down. He lied. He stole. He put us all at risk, and it's just getting worse. And if we don't stand up and start really causing a commotion, and I'm starting to see it, but it's got to be a lot louder than that. They had hundreds of thousands of people marching in Greece last week because of a cover-up with a train accident that killed a bunch of people. One train accident, hundreds of thousands of people. We're a much bigger country, and so much more is happening to us. We damn well better wake up, or it's going to be over. And I don't want to move. International moving is such a pain.
It's also this thing of no matter how much you try to insulate yourself at that level, that the overall civility, like civil society itself, is a form of security. So at a certain point when things get so bad, and I'm not talking about a place like Russia where it's just been bad, there's generations of bad and people aren't really used to any kind of other life.
Mm-hmm.
But here you get a steep drop and people's expectations of society working a certain way. Yeah, fine, get rid of the courts, get rid of all the police, everybody that is going to pacify the mobs that come after you. Like, it will not end well. You can think, no matter how much money, whatever relative insulation you think you're going to get for selling out people in this country, someone somewhere is going to have a problem with it that's a lot closer to you than you think. And it will make life difficult for you. Mm-hmm. It's not going to go well.
Look at the just the vast list of enemies that this regime currently has.
They can't show their face anywhere.
It's who?
This regime.
Well, they are showing their face everywhere. That's the problem.
I know.
I wish they wouldn't, but yeah, there they are all the time saying some.
No, but they haven't realized how bad it is yet.
Yeah, I mean, they never will, because they have so many yes men around them that will just back up whatever they say and just spread the lies.
For now.
They have changed the pool of reporters in the White House. So you can't even have people in the White House asking legitimate questions or reporting the facts to people, because they're shut out. This is a very Soviet type thing to do, a very Putin-esque type thing to do. So the first question that Zelensky was asked was from some guy who's dating Marjorie Taylor Greene, who wanted to know why he wasn't wearing a suit. Yeah, talk about disrespectful. That is the most important thing to you? This guy whose country is under constant bombardment for the last 3 years, and a lot longer too, as far as just being threatened by Russia, and you care about what he's wearing? That is the stupidity, the simplicity that has replaced actual hard-hitting questions and analysis and all the things we've come to expect. So, yeah, this is what is being changed. The media is now the enemy. Science is now the enemy. Medicine is now the enemy. Other countries are now the enemy. Canada's the enemy. Mexico's the enemy. And I think, you know, one of the reasons why the tariffs came into effect is because they backed up Zelensky, as they should. But now, because they did that and didn't back up Trump, they're the enemy.
People that hate them are ever more people that are beginning to hate them still have proximity. So that is a veneer. Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course they put people around them that make them feel powerful. That's the whole point of it. But what I'm saying is, they're still widely, like, their actions are not helping people. And it is, there's no running away from that. Mm-hmm. And if you look at people who have amassed wild amounts of money, look how paranoid Putin is. Look how paranoid Elon Musk is. Like, the amount of security, the amount of, like, layers and protection, and all they do is work on protecting ego. And the minute they're challenged, they react like wildly, like just they get so offended when they're challenged in any way, because they're so unused to it. It's like an unfamiliar feeling, because every bit of what they curate around them is to make them feel powerful. Mm-hmm. So I just think, like, that there's that unrelatability. It will only increase as they try to, like, continue to act this way and outside the interest of the populace. So it will make them further and further out of touch, it'll be harder and harder for them to appear and do things. The campaign trail was already a little, like, choppy, let's say. So I would just say, you know, doing good things, and there's something to be said for virtue, even if you are transgressing the wider populace, and they're not even interested in paltry efforts at doing right by the large amounts of people in this country and in other parts of the world that are being really upset by their actions.
Well, you know, I think what you said about money before certainly applies. If you look at the people that you know Trump bows down to, Elon Musk, Vladimir Putin, they all have significantly more money than Trump does. Trump's worth what, about $7-8 billion by some estimates. Well, Putin is well over $150 billion. That's the difference. Okay, it's insane. And I think, you know, it's more about that than any kind of actual threat, actual military threat or anything like that. Although that's probably part of it.
Now do it in Bitcoin.
No, I'm not going to do that.
Oh, wait, we don't know.
No. The thing is, people are finally having enough of this. You might have seen some clips of some town halls that are happening, some Republican town halls. Well, now congressional Republicans are being advised against holding in-person town halls because people are showing up and people are asking hard questions. The chair of the National Republican Congressional Committee, which is the Hill committee that works to get Republicans elected to the House, told lawmakers in a closed-door meeting today, this morning, that there were more efficient ways to reach constituents than in-person town halls, according to two sources in the room. The chairman, who is Representative Richard Hudson, Republican of North Carolina, compared the moment to 2017, when a series of GOP town halls made headlines after angry attendees confronted lawmakers. A committee spokesperson declined to comment, this is true. This is a fact. This is happening. You can see all the clips of people confronting them. So what do they do? What is their courageous way of dealing with that? Hiding. All right. Our own representative here, Nicholas Lolota, he has a town hall meeting, but virtual. I'm not even sure it's a town hall meeting. It's just some kind of proclamation or whatever. And that's tomorrow. You know, good luck crashing that. Good luck getting your voice heard. What Democrats should do right now, I think they should have all the town meetings, all the town halls, because they have questions too. They have things to confront the Republicans with, and it would be a great way to bond with the public, to share ideas as to what we should do next, because the Democrats alone don't seem to have that. They don't seem to have that answer. So maybe some input from people. So I'm calling on every Democratic congressperson, representative, senator, to have a town hall meeting with their constituents to talk these things through, since the Republicans are too cowardly to do that themselves.
Yeah, I'm all for the discomfort at those GOP town halls, because they need to be thinking twice everywhere they go. Everywhere. Because they're not doing right by people. And people will continue to let them know. And I think for the Democrats, absolutely, or independents, whatever, everybody else should open them up and actually have the conversations. Engage in a dialogue. I think it would make for better Democratic representatives and officials, because they'll be on their it will keep them on their toes, and it will keep them away from like bullet points from some memo from like the party or some, you know, some kind of like manufactured thing. When you've talked to people over and over and over, and you've heard the same questions, and you've honed how you can talk about it in public, you will sound a lot more cogent because you've already answered the question multiple times. You'll also understand what people are curious about, what people expect, what suggestions you can weigh the validity when you get back, you know, take notes or transcribe the minutes and the kind of discussion you had. But stay on your toes, because then when you're being interviewed or when you're on the floor somewhere, you will have, just off the top of your head, you will have practiced all of that. And I think that's where you can combat that staleness. Any age, whatever age, it's not about old or young in the parties, but be practiced in talking to the public, because that's what you're doing on the floor of the Senate or in the House, like, or every, you know, in the city halls, everywhere. Like, if you've talked to people about this stuff, whether it's in line getting coffee or wherever at a meeting, it will already have been a discussion that you've aired, and you understand what you want to speak to. You may have made a mistake or misspoke, but you'll already have done it, so you won't fall into those traps. And the less time we hear lies from the GOP and all their backpedaling and mealy mouse stuff, like, the less the better, and the less practice there'll be.
Well, we have a speech tonight. Trump is giving a speech to Congress, not State of the Union. You don't have State of the Union the first year a president takes office. This is a speech to both houses. It'll be starting shortly after we end tonight. And it might be fiery. You know, I sure hope it is fiery. Headline I'm seeing here is some Democrats plot to disrupt Trump's speech to Congress. These people should be disrupted every moment of their waking life. Note, I don't say wake them up. I say, well, you know, let them sleep peacefully, but when they're awake, you disrupt as much as you possibly can. Now, Democratic lawmakers are discussing all kinds of ways that they can do this. Now, some of these tactics go beyond their leader's recommendation that members simply bring guests that are hurt by Trump and Doge. So there might be some difference of opinion as to what the most effective way is. I'm of the camp that, yeah, just having people show up and be polite and nice and maybe sing a song or something like that, it's not the way to really get people galvanized. So basically, some members have told colleagues that they may walk out of the chamber when Trump says specific lines they find objectionable. That's going to be tough because, you know, there are going to be so many lines like that. Do you walk out the first time? Do you come back in and walk out again the next time he does it? Or, you know, there's going to be only Republicans left pretty soon if everybody just walks out and stays out. A wide array of props, including noisemakers, has also been floated. Hey, I'm all for that. Remember how disrespectful Republicans were when Biden was giving speech, when Obama was giving speeches. So let's give them a taste of their own medicine. Let's be loud and obnoxious. I don't mind being loud and obnoxious sometimes. I don't like loud and obnoxious, but I don't mind being something I don't like. You know, the important thing is that other people mind that. So, yeah. All right. What else? Signs with anti-Trump or anti-Doge messages. Yeah, just like Republican Rashida Tlaib, Michigan, held up a sign during Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu's speech last year that said war criminal. Yeah. We don't have enough time to get into him, but boy. Eggs or empty egg cartons to highlight how inflation is driving up the price of eggs. I've got another idea concerning eggs. Can I say that? I can't say that? All right, all right.
Pies, obviously pie prices are really...
I just want to bring pies and eggs to the... I mean, everyone likes that. Okay, fine. Let people figure out what to do with them. Pocket constitutions to make the case that Trump has been violating the Constitution by shutting down congressionally authorized agents. Okay, how does that work? What, are you going to wave a pocket constitution in the air? You know, unless you throw it at him, no one's going to see it. No, I vote no on that one. Hand clappers, red cards, like those held up to express disagreement at town halls and various other props have also been discussed. I don't know what a hand clapper is. It sounds like clapping your hands, which you don't want to do. I'm not sure what that, but it sounds like it might make noise, and that's a good thing. So, yeah, make as much noise. Disrupt the bastard. Make it impossible for him to continue. He deserves no less. In closed-door meetings on the House floor Monday night, lawmakers were specifically discouraged from using props. Why? Explain to me why you don't want to make a commotion. There are definitely a lot of constituents that really want Democrats to disrupt, and there are constituents who feel that just plays into his hands. We are deep into his hands, all right? It's time we fight our way out of his hands. You know, it's time we make his hands regret ever having held us.
This is like...
I want to get out of this analogy.
This is something that's been bugging me. I don't need another scholar, another great thinker, another writer to come out with a piece about why or what is happening. We know. We're well aware. It's totally obvious. It's clear. We're utterly informed. I don't need to know what this obscure philosopher or this legal expert, like, there's no more punditry. Like, there's no more that can be said about what's occurring. It's time for action. It's not about, like, somebody's deep thought about this. It's not deep. It's super shallow.
Some people are going to wear pink in a unified display of defiance to a president many of them despise. The Women's Caucus are going to wear pink. Female members of the Congressional Black Caucus are going to wear black. Ukraine Caucus co-chair Marcy Kaptur will distribute ties and scarves with the colors of Ukraine's flag to signal support for President Zelensky. Others plan to sit stone-faced and refuse to clap. All right, they'll just think the Supreme Court is bigger. You need to make a disruption. I can't believe these people are in politics and they don't know this. When things get this bad, you need to be loud. You need to be aggressive. You need to be visible and audible.
Can someone bring a cow as a
wearing
guest?
Pink? Wearing pink is nice. Holding a constitution is nice. It's symbolic, but we're beyond the symbols. It's time for the symbols that are spelled, CYMB, those symbols with the drums and all.
Oh, that's
yeah,
good.
Bring that.
Percussion.
Yeah. Say, Mr. Jeffries, I'll bring a symbolic protest tonight. Yeah, symbolic.
Yeah.
You don't know how I'm spelling it, but you'll hear my symbols.
Like a marching band.
I'd make a good congressperson. I would.
Or a DJ, like have a DJ in the back. Like.
So anyway, did you hear today with Zelensky? What he basically...
No.
He's a diplomat, I'll say that. He's basically doing what he believes is right for his country, but you can tell he's just holding his nose while he does it. He's proposed a possible peace plan to end the war in Ukraine, saying he is willing to work constructively under Donald Trump's strong leadership and to sign a deal giving the U.S. access to his country's mineral wealth. In an attempt to mend fences with Washington after Trump's actions on Friday, He basically said he was ready to come to the negotiating table as soon as possible. I would like to reiterate Ukraine's commitment to peace, he wrote on Twitter. He sketched out a plan as to how the war might stop. The first stages could include a release of prisoners and a ban on missiles and long-range drones used to attack energy and civilian infrastructure. This truce in the air might be applied to the sea as well, he added, if Russia will do the same. Now, this might seem like capitulation to Trump, but it's actually quite smart because it forces Trump's hand. He basically is saying, yeah, we'll stop. We'll stop doing this if Russia stops as well. And if Trump says, no, you stop, Russia can keep going, but you stop, it makes it even clearer than it already is whose side Trump is on. Zelensky acknowledged his meeting on Friday did not go the way it was supposed to. He said, it's regrettable it happened this way. It is time to make things right. We would like future cooperation and communication to be constructive. I am very, very sorry for my irresponsible acts. One of those sentences he did not say. Kyle, which sentence would you like him not to have said?
The last one?
Yes, the last one. He did not say that.
Good.
Because he has integrity. He's not going to bow down and apologize like Lindsey Graham would do.
Yeah, I was about to puke in my mouth.
Yeah, no, you already did. Okay.
No, I didn't.
We'll talk later.
We as a country, we do make fantastic weapons. So, mm-hmm. I mean, this is a good look, and you're right. It does put it on Trump to be, he has to double down on his boyfriend.
Now, keep in mind,
Russia.
Yeah, keep in mind what Trump did yesterday. He suspended all aid to Ukraine. The bastard, there's no other word for it. He's basically giving up on a democracy and saying, here, Russia, take it. So, yeah, Zelensky had to do something.
He should have thrown in some extra stuff, 50 miles into Russia, no troops, no fly zone. He should have just thrown everything there in it, made it really big.
Well, you also have to realize this is not Zelensky alone doing this. He has just met with so many leaders in Europe, all of whom quickly, did you see how quickly they voiced their support for Zelensky? Not Trump, Zelensky, after the actions of Friday.
They know who Trump is.
So they all conferred on, okay, what's the best move? Okay, say Trump is a great leader. Say, kiss up to him. He's a baby. This is how you get him to stop acting like this. And that's what he's doing. He's not apologizing. He's being the stronger person here. Now, Trump is going to say some interesting things tonight, I'll bet. And the Republicans, you know what they're going to do. They're going to spin this and say, well, look what he did. He came crawling back because of Trump's strong leadership.
Nobody cares what they think.
Half the country is listening to them, unfortunately.
You thought. I don't think they are now.
Well, I'd like to think that, but prove it to me.
People change.
Can we have an election tomorrow? I mean, I want this to end, believe me, but I don't want to wait 4 more years for it to end. I really don't. This is ridiculous. And I think people are realizing, especially veterans, federal workers, people who go to the store and buy things.
Defense contractors.
This is not what they voted for. And, I don't want to say I told you so. I don't think anybody should be saying that, but the warnings were there. All this kissing up to Putin, people were talking about that in the first Trump regime.
He's still complaining about it.
Yeah, but it's but we're still talking about it. Why are we still talking about it?
Because it was warranted.
It was warranted. Absolutely. Give me a break. So, yeah, I'd like to talk to these people as far as where they stand now. But I really have little patience for people who just swallow whatever they are told without question and basically turn today's hero into tomorrow's villain.
Well,
because somebody said that this is the official line now. Look at look at people like Lindsey Graham is a perfect example of how he was somebody who admired Zelensky. And as soon as Trump said, "You're the bad person," he basically changed his tune completely. And there are so many examples of that with these people where they just completely do a 180.
Yeah, I don't think Lindsey Graham has much of his own opinions at all.
No, they don't.
He really is just kind of
it's
like...
sad.
Yeah. I have no comment about that because, yeah, it's just... And it doesn't really matter what regret... I mean, okay, people needed to be right. It doesn't matter if they aren't. And it doesn't really matter how they were in the past. It matters what are they experiencing today. And that's what I meant by, like, this is a pervasive attack on the wider populace. And in many regards, it's quite uncomfortable for folks. And it doesn't matter if they were wrong, and we don't need to tell them.
No, we don't. We don't.
That's in their hearts and between them and their God or not.
Look, we know many of these people. They're good people. They want what's best. But, you know, people can be misguided. We can be misguided. Anyone can be a victim of this. We've been saying this for years.
Well,
we're not immune.
It was an enormous campaign to convince them that he was the answer to their problems.
Elon Musk paid for that. And that's why, you know, Trump is in his debt forever. And that is scary. Right there, that is scary. Hey, we are pretty much out of time, but I just wanted to say one more thing. First of all, our email address, otw@2600.com. Please write to us if you have any opinions or questions. You've seen this crazy guy, Stephen Miller, White House Chief of Staff, I believe. My God. He's basically into this whole America First thing.
Oh, that pinhead.
You know, we've been down this road before, and that America First is something that existed back in the World War II era, and it was fascism and all kinds of ugliness.
They recycle a lot of this stuff.
They really do. It all comes back. All these things that happened before, they'll happen again.
Get some new ideas.
Well, yeah, there are variances of it.
Or fully baked ones.
But I'd like to go out with this song by Woody Guthrie from way back, basically about exactly that, about World War II, the Nazis, America First, and what it's really all about. We will see you next week. Have a good night.
Bye, y'all.
I forgot to turn the volume up. Say good night again.
Said goodbye, all of you.
Oh, my God. There we go.
Mr. Charlie Lindbergh, he flew to old Berlin. Got him a big iron cross and he flew right back again to Washington, Washington. Mrs. Charlie Lindbergh, she come dressed in red. Said, "I'd like to sleep in that pretty White House bed in Washington, Washington." Lindy said to Annie, "We'll get there by and by, but we'll have to split the bed up with Wheeler, Clark, and I in Washington, Washington." Hitler wrote to Lindy, said, "Do your very worst." Lindy started an outfit that he called America First in Washington, Washington. All around the country, Lindbergh, he did fly. Gasoline was paid for by Hoover, Clark, and I in Washington, Washington. Lindy said to Hoover, "We'll do the same as France. Make a deal with Hitler, and then we'll get our chance in Washington, Washington." Then they had a meeting and all the firsters come. Come on a walk and they come on a run in Washington, Washington. Yonder comes Father Coughlin wearing the silver chain. Cast on his stomach and Hitler on the brain. Washington, Washington. Mr. John L. Lewis was setting straddle a fence. His daughter signed with Lindbergh and we ain't seen her since. Washington, Washington. Hitler said to Lindy, stall them all you can. Going to bomb Pearl Harbor with the help of old Japan. Washington, Washington. Then on a December morning, the bums come from Japan. Wake Island and Pearl Harbor kill 1,500 men. Washington, Washington. Now Lindy tried to join the army, but they wouldn't let him in. Afraid he'd sell to Hitler a few more million men. In Washington, Washington. So I'm gonna tell you people, if Hitler's gonna be beat, common working people has got to take the seat. In Washington, Washington. And I'm gonna tell you workers, for you cash in your checks, they say America first, but they mean America next. In Washington, Washington.
You are listening to The Struggle Session on WUSB Stony Brook. Marxism-Leninism in the 21st Century, Baby. Let's go.